It's looking more and more like eastern Ukraine is becoming a breakaway territory in a crisis that seems to be going Moscow's way right now. First, the shooting. Two Ukrainian helicopters reportedly shot down, officials in Kiev say by pro-Russian separatists. Ukraine also says it has launched an assault on the rebel stronghold of Slovyansk, a city reportedly surrounded now. And Ukraine has reinstated the draft for men aged 18 to 24. Meanwhile, Moscow taunts the Ukrainian government with suggestions that all hope may be lost for any kind of negotiated settlement, and huge May Day celebrations in Moscow this week, the largest since Soviet times, suggesting that this may be a good moment to be pro-Russian, a message not lost on the people in eastern Ukraine. Joining us now is Stephen Nix, who follows the Ukraine crisis as a regional program director at the nonpartisan International Republican Institute based in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you for having me.
So let me just say right off the bat, the chairman of the board of the IRA is Senator John McCain, and he's been a real activist on Ukraine, encouraging a much stronger confrontation with Russia's Vladimir Putin. Does the IRA take that same position in its approach to Ukraine right now?
Well, IRA is a democracy promotion organization. We work primarily with political parties, and in my division, in most of the former Soviet republics. So our mission really is to promote democracy by building strong, multiple-party, multidimensional political and electoral systems, and that is our main mission. Senator McCain has been a strong advocate of Ukraine, one of the strongest in our Congress. He has advocated for greater sanctions against Russia for its involvement. He's also advocated arming the Ukraine Armed Forces as a deterrent to Russian aggression.
So what are the challenges for Ukraine right now? And I want to talk about the various factions. You'll be responsible at IRI for the, at least in part, some election monitoring that's going to be taking place in the next few weeks.
Yes. Well, with regard to the elections, they're scheduled for May 25th. There will be presidential elections as well as mayoral elections in certain cities. There are a number of issues related to the elections. The government of Ukraine, the interim government, is trying very hard to put in place the mechanics of an election that will be free, fair, transparent, and meets international standards. The challenge is, at least in some of the far eastern oblasts, we predict that there are elements, both external and internal, that will attempt to incite, to provoke, to create disturbances in an effort to discredit these elections. And I think that's what IRI will be watching for. I think that's what one of the many organizations that will be observing, the OSCE, other international organizations, have to be very, very wary of and be on guard and look for this.
Well, let's drill into that a little bit. I mean, there are a lot of people with a stake in having these elections be a fiasco, from Moscow all the way to the border of Poland.
Well, I would say that there's a very small portion of Ukrainians who would like to see these elections not be accredited and not be recognized as free and fair. We all recognize that there are certain divisions within Ukraine. However, these divisions have been exaggerated and overblown by the Kremlin propaganda machine. IRI does a lot of national polling in Ukraine. We've conducted surveys as recently as April. We did another one in March. And our data totally refutes the Kremlin line that large majorities of eastern Ukrainians and Ukrainians as a nation want to see some sort of Russian intervention or feel that they need protection from Russia based on their ethnicity or language. We asked the question of people, do you think that a Russian military intervention is necessary to protect Ukrainians? And an overwhelming number, 85%, say that such intervention is not necessary. Similarly, when asked if Ukraine should remain a unitary, territorial, secure state, overwhelmingly, over 73% stated that they wanted Ukraine to remain intact as a nation and don't want federalization as promoted by Moscow and do not want their country to be divided.
talking with Stephen Nix, who's Regional Program Director for Eurasia at the International Republican Institute. Can you comment, and what do your polls say, if anything, on the allegations from Moscow and elsewhere that among the factions inside Ukraine are a lot of anti-Semitic groups, right-wing groups, and groups that Vladimir Putin has used to discredit the whole humanitarian face of the Ukrainian regime right now?
Well, if it were not so serious, these allegations would be laughable. All one has to do is monitor Russian television. There, Ukraine is portrayed as a failed state, that there's chaos in the capital, that people in Kiev are going hungry, that this government cannot manage the government's affairs, and it's absolutely false and totally refuted by people like myself who travel to Kiev regularly, meet with government leaders, see that they're a functional government, trying to do their best to get through these elections and undertake urgently needed reforms after the disaster of the Yanukovych regime. This is very, very much a part of the Kremlin line. And you've got a very practiced liar in Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, who is, to my dismay and others, is demanding that Ukraine recognize the rights of people in eastern Ukraine, these protesters, to exercise their right of free expression, First Amendment rights, what have you, when at the same time in his own country, if one were to try to engage in any sort of political protest, even to hold up a sign in Red Square, that person would be jailed and fined. So it's incredible to me that Russia is making these demands of Ukraine when these same things are not practiced in their own country.
Stephen Nix is the Regional Program Director for Eurasia at the International Republican Institute. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick joins us now. Todd, welcome.
Hi, John.
So we just heard our colleague at IRI describe how Senator John McCain has taken a very activist role, as you well know, on the Ukraine crisis and confronting Vladimir Putin. How does the rest of that debate play out on Capitol Hill right now?
Yeah, McCain's not alone, but let's listen to him in his own words this week, appearing with a whole bunch of Republicans in the Senate asking for much tougher sanctions on Russia and Vladimir Putin. Listen.
And we are not accusing the administration of doing nothing. What we are saying that nothing they are doing is in any way a break on Vladimir Putin's behavior. And for us to refuse to even give them defensive weapons is an outrage. It's a scandal.
I mean, the real question is what's going to move the needle here? You've got these huge May Day parades in Moscow. There's no sense from Moscow that they're feeling any pain.
One of the things that's complicating American efforts here, John, is a lack of coordination with Europe. The European countries, of course, rely on Russian gas. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is in the White House today speaking with President Obama, presumably about just that issue, trying to get more coordination so that sanctions can be ratcheted up. If we're doing one thing and the Europeans are doing another, they're just not effective. And that's part of the concern. She also met with several Republican senators last night for dinner.
What's the ratchet up situation here? I mean, if you look at the Russian economy, the ruble's doing just fine. I mean, maybe there's an oligarch somewhere who's having a bad day, but he certainly hasn't come into the public.
And that's what McCain and his friends are talking about, is increasing the cost for Putin should he decide to proceed with an incursion into Ukraine to basically make the cost-benefit shift towards more cost.
So if you're looking for a pain from this situation outside of Ukraine, where obviously there are dreadful situations happening there as the fighting begins to escalate and there's this surrounding of the city of Slovyansk, you'd have to leave Earth entirely.
Yeah, John, you know, it's interesting. American and Russian space officials have both been concerned that the increasing tensions were going to lead to an inability for them to cooperate. And indeed, American space officials were forced to announce a suspension of a lot of cooperation with Russians, although this International Space Station efforts were specifically exempt. And this has led to a lot of questions on Capitol Hill this week about what exactly happens if things get really bad. It's sort of a Hollywood movie scenario. Things get really bad between the Americans and the Russians. We rely on them for transportation to the space station and back. Listen to Russian Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin this week talking sort of about what will happen if Americans don't back off.
We have warned our American friends that we will answer declarations with declarations and actions with actions. They say, don't touch the International Space Station in these programs. Okay, then let's do it like this. If they want to hit the economic potential of Russian space engineering, they should use a trampoline to deliver their astronauts to the International Space Station.
Noting that we are dependent on the Russians for a reentry vehicle because we don't have a space shuttle anymore.
And to get there, John, Americans have relied on Soyuz rockets for 11 launches to the ISS over the last 11 years, and we rely on Soyuz to get back. Senators had questions for NASA Administrator Charles Bolden. What happens if things get bad and Americans are stranded on the space station? Listen to Bolden.
Everybody talks about the Russians stranding us. The Soyuz is a three-person crew, three-person spacecraft, and at least two of those people are essential, and okay, usually one of those two essential people is the flight engineer, who's an American astronaut.
Well, at least you hear there, John, NASA officials assuring senators that the Russians won't strand American astronauts aboard the space station if tensions rise to the point where Americans and Russians don't cooperate at all.
Very reassuring. Any positive flag waving there on Capitol Hill from the 6.3% unemployment rate? That's positive news.
Of course, and the biggest drop in the unemployment rate in 5 years, although hundreds of thousands of Americans who've left the workforce, which puts a damper on some of that good news as well. You have to keep in mind that a lot of people aren't looking for work anymore, but certainly the numbers are good.
Forget the silver lining. There are plenty of people on Capitol Hill who will do that. Have a great weekend, Todd.
Thanks, John. You too.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.